Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. "Go, look over the land," he said, "especially Jericho." So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelites have come tonight to spy out the land." So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab, "Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land." But the woman had taken two men and hidden them. She said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them." But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, "I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea. For you have come out of Egypt, and when you did that to Shilon and Og, two kings of Amorites east of Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." "Our lives for your lives," the men assured her. "If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us this land." So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. She said to them, "Go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourself there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way." Now the men had said to her, "This oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless we have entered the land. You have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you brought your father and mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house, if any of them go outside of your house into the street, their blood will be on their own heads. We will not be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell them what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear." "Agreed," she replied. "Let it be as you say." So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window.
Today's message is called Hope in a Time of COVID-19. And the sermon text that you just heard Heather reading is from Joshua chapter 2. If you're anything like me during this pandemic, you have somehow found escape from the madness of everything by reading or watching a good story. And I know that that was 21 verses, but it is an amazing story. The book of Joshua is an amazing story, and that's the one I want to dig in today with you. It's from Joshua, is the sixth book in the Old Testament. Stories from the book have inspired and entertained people for literally thousands of years, so I think it's worth it to look at it today. Again, my sermon today is entitled Hope in a Time of COVID-19, because I believe that this story is not a spy story. It's not a love story. It's a hope story. I believe that this story teaches us about hope. I believe the story will train us and point us to the hope we have in our Lord and God. Let me summarize what happened. Joshua, sent by Moses. Moses died in the wilderness. He appointed Joshua to lead the people. Joshua sends out two spies. They meet Rahab, a prostitute, who welcomes these two travelers, whom she recognizes as Israelites. She hides them from the kings, who guard and save them. She guards and saves them in exchange for the salvation of her own family, from what she and others in Jericho know is inevitable. Their city, their town, their way of life was crumbling, and they would soon be taken over by this wandering group of slaves known as the Hebrews. They were a wandering group of slaves from Egypt, and they had been wandering for 40 years. So she welcomes them into her home. She lets them down, escape after sending the soldiers from the king off in another direction. She lets them down by a rope through a window in the city wall and is instructed to put a scarlet cord outside her window so that when the spies return, they can safely identify her and her family, and they will be saved from the ruin of the invading Israelite forces. Joshua is a complicated book. It's deeply interconnected with the stories that come before it in the first five books of the Old Testament known as the Torah. The Torah means instruction. It means law. And in Joshua, the story here has reached a pinnacle, a climax, where the people, given a new leader, Joshua, are commanded by God directly to cross the River Jordan and enter the Promised Land. God has promised to be with them. He said to Joshua in the first chapter, "Be exceedingly strong and courageous, Joshua. Be exceedingly strong and courageous." God said in the first chapter, "I will give you every place where you set your foot." He said, "No one will be able to stand against you, Joshua, all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you, Joshua. I will never leave you nor forsake you." Verse 5 of chapter 1. And verse 6, again, "Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors and give them." Joshua, be exceedingly strong and courageous. The word "me'od" there means exceedingly strong and courageous. Be as strong and courageous as you can be. He also reminds him to be careful to obey all the laws that Moses had given them and not turn from it to the right or to the left. "Keep this book of the law," Moses says, "on your lips. Meditate on it on a day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it." Be strong and courageous. Again, he says in verse 9 of chapter 1, "Don't be afraid, Joshua. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Okay, Joshua, you got this. Now go into the land. Be strong. Be courageous. That's chapter 1. That's the context. And the context behind that was five books of the Old Testament and background story. And here we are at the pinnacle, the peak of the story. The people are going to enter the land, the promised land. They have been waiting for 40 years. Here comes chapter 2. What will the people do? What will Joshua do? How will Joshua respond to this command to be strong and courageous? Okay, so let's pick up at verse 1 of chapter 2. "Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. 'Go look over the land,' he said, 'especially Jericho.' So they went and they entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there." Be exceedingly sneaky and secretive? Is that what's supposed to happen here? Wait a second. Be strong and courageous. And what happened? Two spies, number one and number two, both unnamed. But there is one person named here, Rahab. But two spies sneak into the land. They hide. I don't know. Not so bold, not so courageous, is it? Two spies. and a prostitute named Rahab. They go to a prostitute's house. Someone tells the king that number one and number two are at Rahab's house, and the king commands her to bring the spies out. Bring them out. I want to talk to them. Because they are seeking out our land. They are spying on us. They are figuring out a way to defeat us. So the king thinks. Not so sneaky. Rahab covers for these so-called bold and courageous spies, right? There they are hiding in her rooftop under the flax, stalks of flax. Rahab says, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from at dusk when it was time to close the city gate. They left. And I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. So Rahab gives them the old diversion trick. They went that away. They went that away. I don't know. I don't know where they are. Why does Rahab do this? We'll look at that in just a second. But meanwhile, number one and number two, those two bold and courageous spies where they are hiding under the stalks of flax. Lucky for them, Rahab is smart. Lucky for them, Rahab is paying attention to what's going on. Without Rahab, the story ends there. These two spies are done for, right? The spies are caught and the king puts them in his torture chamber or something like that. We know how that goes. We've seen books and movies of spies getting caught. These guys aren't exactly Bond, James Bond, or anything like this. I don't even think they really know what they're doing. Here's the first thing about hope. Hope comes from the most unexpected places. Hope comes from the most unexpected people. Hope comes from the most unexpected things. Some of you, like me, headed off to college and said, Mom and Dad, thank you. I'm going to work so hard, get good grades. And your parents read you that verse from Joshua. Okay, son or daughter, be strong and courageous. You can do it. And you get to college like me and you were just overwhelmed with the social newness of everything. You stayed up too late playing video games. You forget to study for the test. You gain 15 pounds and suddenly that promise of an awesome college of experience comes crashing down. There was great expectation. There was promises of being bold and courageous. There was expectation that success was on a horizon. And suddenly, we are met with a different story. All of that comes crashing down. And spy number one and spy number two are here. And they're in a very bad situation. Not only that, Joshua and the Israelites here are in a bad situation. If we've been reading, the Lord told them to enter the land. And wherever their feet went, God would give them the land, but instead, they're afraid. They're afraid. They're hiding. Hope comes from the most unexpected place. Yeah, and when I was a freshman in college, I entered college, I had a hard time adjusting. And for me, hope came from a very unexpected place during that time in my life. I had floor mates. I had six floor mates who play guitar. I had never picked up a guitar before. And suddenly, I was learning how to play guitar. And then I had other roommates who sang. And I'd never really sung before. And that freshman year, that was hard for me. I began singing songs, playing the guitar, even writing some songs. That was something I never thought I would do. But it gave me hope. It helped me connect to God. It helped me to feel like I was there at college for a reason. And that God was working in my life and that God was present with me there in the midst of that difficult transition in my life. The hope of Israel here in this story comes from a dynamic and intelligent Canaanite woman named Rahab. She's likely beautiful and able to attract any man she so wished, even including possibly the king of Jericho himself or those in his royal court. How does the king know about her? Rahab's home is a place where the king of Jericho and his men know about. They know Rahab. And their attention is constantly attuned to her home, where let's just say things of an unscrupulous nature occur on a regular basis. Rahab is unmarried, single, no children. And like many women in the ancient world, they use their beauty and their brains to survive in a male-dominated society. So why does Rahab hide these so-called spies, spy number one and two. Her hospitality to the so-called brave and courageous spies was not going to come without a cost. She was expecting something in return. She knows how this works. She flips the power around. She sees in these two men as an opportunity to be saved from her dire situation. And in a second, Rahab's going to speak. She's going to give a speech to the two spies. And let me remind you of one more thing that hangs over this entire story. See, the Israelites were commanded to enter the land and totally eradicate all the Canaanite people. Man, woman, child, even animals. In Deuteronomy 7 and 12, there's some very problematic text in here. Either punitively or proactively, they demand God, and through speaking through Moses, demands total eradication of the behaviors of the people that they were entering into their land, of the people they were going to be living amongst. And God wanted it gone. He wanted, Pastor Becky last week talked about sin and how sin cannot dwell. We cannot dwell in the presence of God if there's sin in our life, and therefore we have to confess that sin, and we need to give it over to God so we can experience his presence, because God's presence can't be in the presence of sin. But in Deuteronomy 7 and 20, and then later on in chapter 20, it explains why this ban on Canaanite people is necessary. So they may not teach you, it says in verse 16 and 18 of chapter 20. So they may not teach you to do all the abhorrent things that they do for their gods, and thus sin against the Lord your God. See, God wanted that purity and holiness from his people. So all of that is hanging over this story. Now our Israelite spies encounter a woman who is a Canaanite. And Rahab is going to throw a monkey wrench into all of that. She's going to complicate that command from Deuteronomy. And our historian, our author, here in the book of Joshua, knows that. And I think he's doing it on purpose. Before, it was just a straightforward command. You go in there and you annihilate every single person, man, woman, and child. Here comes Rahab, throwing a monkey wrench in this whole thing. Not that simple. It's not that easy. See, people get hung up on those commands in Deuteronomy without continuing to read from book 5 to book 6. You got to keep reading the story, right? Keep reading the story. The story isn't finished. I'm sweating. Your story, my story, our lives aren't finished. How would you like it if someone characterized your story based on something you did when you were 16 years old or 17 years old? Your story's not done. You got to keep reading that. You got to keep creating that story. There's a story that is still being written. Rahab comes into the story, comes into the window and complicates everything. Complicates our neat and tidy theology, right? Don't hang around with Canaanites. Suddenly, two spies, spy one and spy two, are desperately dependent on a Canaanite woman. What will she say? What will she say to these spies? And this is the center of this story. Okay, so verse 8, chapter 2. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up to the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water in the Red Sea. So that was the Exodus event. They heard about that for you when you came out of Egypt. And what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan. If you remember that story, the Israelites came to them peacefully and said, hey, can we come through your land? Can we just peacefully walk through your land? They said, no. And the Israelites said, no, we just want to peacefully come through your land. It's no big deal. We're on our way somewhere else. They said, no. They went back to their camp. Suddenly, the kings of Sihon and Og attacked the Israelites. And the Israelites defended themselves. And in defending themselves, completely annihilated the armies of Sihon and Og. Rahab had heard about this. The people in Jericho knew this. And she says, when we heard of it, listen to her words, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. Everyone's courage failed because of you. Our hearts melted. Here Rahab has just described for us human desperation in a situation that is impossible to fix. I think she has well described how we felt in the last weeks as our hearts have melted, as our lives have completely been flipped upside down and changed. I think she's described the situation of COVID-19 for many of us. We heard what was going on in these other countries, China and Italy, and then suddenly it became a lot more real to us when it hit New York and then Louisiana and now Chicago and even our own city. It has now come to our doorstep, and it's not the flu. It's not just a regular old flu. Perhaps if you aren't someone who's vulnerable to this illness, you're also thinking of the millions of people who struggle with depression, thoughts of suicide, people who are struggling through unemployment, loss of business, marital strife, or those caught in domestic abuse situations at home. Our hearts have been melting over the last few weeks, and Rahab describes this perfectly. Rahab's heart, the people of Jericho, their society is crumbling, and they know something is on the horizon, something major, something big is going to change everything. Rahab, and like the Israelites, were in what theologians and philosophers call liminal space. Liminal space. And I was reminded of this idea this week as a preacher gave this quote from Richard Rohr. It says, liminal space is the place of waiting. It's the place of waiting. It is a unique spiritual position where human beings hate to be, but where the biblical God is always leading them. It is where you have left the tried and true, but have not yet been able to replace it with anything else. It is when you are finally out of the way. It is when you are between your old comfort zone and any possible new answer. If you're not trained on how to hold anxiety, how to live with ambiguity, how to trust and wait, you will run. Anything to flee this terrible cloud of unknowing. Unquote. Anything to flee this terrible cloud of unknowing. Liminal space, whether we like it or not, is where we are right now. We don't know the answer. We don't know when the pandemic will be up. And we are having to be in this uncomfortable place, in an uncomfortable space, and we are being trained. We are being asked by our Lord to trust in new ways, to not hold anxiety, to live with ambiguity, and to wait. Hope is grounded in heaven. Hope is grounded in heaven, and this will be the words of Rahab. These are the words of Rahab. She grounds her hope in heaven because she's about to say something, and that liminal space is a place of waiting because she's about to say something that is one of the most profound statements in the whole Bible, and it echoes the fifth book of the Bible, Deuteronomy. She knows, for the Lord your God is in heaven above. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. In Rahab's place of waiting, she simply acknowledges that God is in heaven and that God is the God of heaven and God is the God of the earth below. Man, this story has taken a deep, dark, different turn than what we thought. Rahab has just simply... Thanks, Heather. Rahab has out-theologized these spies. These spies are the ones who are supposed to be saying this stuff. But out of her mouth, the Canaanite woman, the prostitute, out of her mouth is, for the Lord your God is in heaven and on earth. She knows that heaven is the place where hope comes from. The desperation of this woman and the situation in Jericho turns the salvation of these men, turns the desperation into the salvation of these men who will hear the testimony of this woman. She will save them from destruction. So the first thing about hope is that it comes from unexpected places. And the second thing about hope is that it is grounded in the God of heaven. It comes from heaven. It comes from the power of the Almighty God who saves, and a rescuer who sees us and hears our prayers, and a God who holds the power of life and death, and a God who is ever renewing us, ever giving us and displaying for us unconditional love. And what we wouldn't know unless we read Deuteronomy, the book before this one, before this story, is that Rahab basically quotes it word for word. And what you would also know is that one command can supersede another law if they're in conflict with one another. So yes, the command was to cherem, to annihilate, to ban all Canaanites. But yet, out of the mouth of this Canaanite woman comes a confession so central to the faith of the Hebrew people that we should be astonished. It is astonishing. The confession of Rahab to the power and the holiness of God of Israel is a law that supersedes all others. It is something that cuts through every culture, every language, every barrier, every person, every situation, every sin pattern, everything that we think has power over us. This confession, listen to what Paul says in Romans chapter 10. Christ is the culmination of the law so that there may be righteousness for everyone who believes. Moses writes this about righteousness, that it is by the law. Whoever does these things will live by them, the righteousness that is by faith. So what does it say? The word that is near you and it is in your mouth and in your heart, that is the message concerning the faith that we proclaim. If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it is with your mouth that you profess your faith and are saved. That's the law that goes all the way back to Abraham, where God says, I account it to you, your faith, as righteousness, Abraham. Though you are a messed up man, I account to you your faith as righteousness. And I think there on that rooftop was a holy moment. There in the middle of the night. There in the threat of danger and of death and of sudden destruction for both parties, Rahab possibly at the hands of the Israelites and the two spies possibly at the hands of the king's men. So they make a deal. They make a covenant. They agree. They take oaths together. She will show them the way to safety in return for her whole family being spared. See, she's smart. She's smart. She can see the situation and use the situation for her advantage. She will hang a scarlet cord, it says, out her window as a sign and a reminder of her oath to them and their oath to her. This is where I was talking about earlier. Now, this is what we typically think of as a rope. It's made of some natural materials, probably some synthetic materials as well. But this isn't too much different than what maybe this rope that the spies were lowered down from that window look like. Interestingly, the flax on top of Rahab's roof would have been made to make ropes kind of like this. And she uses a rope, number one, to lower the men down the window. But then a different word in Hebrew is used to talk about the cord that she's going to drape from her window as a sign to the Israelites later on in chapter 6 when they come to Jericho to march around the walls. They're going to look up and see that window and see a red cord. That word cord is the word tikva. The word tikva is the word for cord. It is the word for waiting. And it is the word for hope. Its root comes from a word that means to basically tense up, to hold. It's the word not for a rope, but a cord. She will hold that hope. She will hold that cord. That cord will remain on her window until the spies return one day to save her family. And the cord is not only something she made using the stalks of flax on her rooftop. It is something Rahab negotiated with these men for her own salvation and the salvation of her family. Those flax plans, made a way for her to find salvation. That very cord, that very hope is what she places on her window. Hope. Hope is a cord we hold on to and display to the world. We've said that hope comes from the most unexpected places, that hope is grounded in heaven. And finally, hope is something that we need to hold on to. Hope is waiting. It is knowing that a better thing is awaiting us. Like we say around here, hope is an avenue. Hope is a path. It is a road for us to walk on. It is a place for us to walk the walk of salvation. So I want you to take your rope, and as the worship team comes up, I want you to take the string or the rope or the cord or whatever you have, and as an illustration of hope, I want you to run your cord from person to person, and I want you to hold on to that string, that rope, that cord, okay? Again, this word tikva, it is the Hebrew word for hope. It is the word for cord, and it is what our wonderful example in Rahab teaches us about hope. So we are going to conclude with this last song. Now, this last song is an old song. It is I guess I'm not that old, but we sang it when I was a kid. And it's the song "Bind Us Together," and it talks about cords that bind us together. And as we hold on to these cords, we are reminded in verse 1, there is only one God, there is only one King, there is only one body, and that is why we sing. In verse 2, we are made for the glory of God, we are purchased by His precious Son, we are born with the right to be clean, for Jesus the victory has won. We are holding on to that hope today, holding on to that promise today. You, verse 3, you are the family of God, you are the promised divine, you are God's chosen desire. You are the glorious new wine. We're going to sing that song in closing. Go ahead and get that string in your home and wrap yourselves in it. Wrap yourselves together. Hold on to that hope today. Hold on to that cord today as a sign of God's promise and love for you.